Good Tuesday evening. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 30th, 2020, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead tonight, the city of Fayetteville is reestablishing a board of health. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich tells us more in about 10 minutes. After tonight's show, stay with 91.3 for great classical music until 5 tomorrow morning. Peter Vandegraaff selects recordings of music from across the centuries every Sunday through Thursday night from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. The music begins after this updated evening edition of Ozarks at Large. Arkansas's cumulative cases of COVID-19 increased by 520 new cases during the most recent 24-hour testing period. There have now been 20,777 cases in Arkansas since the pandemic began. Washington County had the most cases in the most recent testing period, 152. Pulaski County had 118 new cases, and Benton County, 33 new cases. There were 5 fatalities attributed to the virus during the monitoring period, and now 270 Arkansans have died from COVID-19. There are 10 fewer hospitalizations in the state compared to this time yesterday. There are just fewer than 6,000 active cases in the state. As Arkansas prepares to ease restrictions on visitations at long-term care facilities, Dr. Nate Smith, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says the state has almost completed the testing of every resident and every staff member at such facilities.
We still have a few facilities that, for whatever reason, were not able to do all their testing on their scheduled dates, but we've tested more than 40,000 residents and staff in long-term care facilities.
The easing of visiting restrictions at long-term care facilities, with outdoor visits encouraged when conditions allow, begins tomorrow at such facilities that have met all criteria set by the state and the CDC for safe opening. Governor Asa Hutchinson says there are some long-term care facilities that won't be able to have visitations tomorrow because there have been new positive tests at those facilities.
And this new CDC guidelines provides that to reopen a nursing home, there should be 28 days without a positive case. And so we will be following that guideline as part of the direction to the nursing homes as they try to open up visitors to the loved ones.
Dr. Smith says there are at least 59 long-term care facilities in Arkansas that will have to wait 28 days to allow visitors after at least one positive case of the virus was diagnosed in a patient or staff member. Dr. Smith says he's encouraged that positive case numbers continue to decline in Benton County and that the state will conduct more targeted testing in Washington County.
We will continue to make testing available through targeted events so that all the populations within that county have access and will feel comfortable with the venues. So we'll keep testing there.
And as the 4th of July holiday weekend approaches, Dr. Smith says there are some activities planned around the state at larger venues, each, he says, with a Department of Health approved plan for safe gatherings.
But a plan is only as good as its implementation, and I want to give that as a message. If you come to a large venue and then you don't follow the instructions of the organizers, especially with regard to masks, then that plan isn't going to work. It's not going to keep people safe. It's very important when you come to a large venue that you wear a mask, especially if it's an inside venue. Outside is safer, but inside it's particularly important to have those to wear the masks and to maintain that physical distancing.
And today is the end of the fiscal year for Arkansas. And Governor Hutchinson says the state will end $360 million ahead of what was a COVID revised revenue projection made earlier this year. He says that means the Revenue Stabilization Act will be filled.
The public school fund will have $121 million restored. The institutions of higher education will have $42.4 million restored, and they will be fully funded for this fiscal year, including the productivity funding. Secretary Walther will be announcing today that the revenue forecast will be revised. And the revenue forecast will be revised to $5.624 billion.
The governor says the state will also be able to restore more than $72 million to the Medicaid Trust Fund. He says a balance of about $255 million in the trust fund will be carried into the new fiscal year, And he says the state will also enter the new fiscal year with about $225 million in unallocated reserves. The Bella Vista City Council is strongly encouraging residents to follow the recommended CDC guidelines regarding face coverings and social distancing to help slow the spread of COVID-19. The council passed the resolution in a special meeting yesterday afternoon. The guidelines are not a mandate, but the mayor and city officials are stressing the importance of protecting the community by following CDC guidelines like wearing a mask, washing hands, and observing social distancing. This is Ozarks at Large. The Annie E. Casey Foundation has released the 31st edition of its Kids Count data book. The annual report looks at child well-being in the United States by analyzing economics, health, education, and family and community. While Arkansas's overall ranking of childhood well-being remained the same as last year's report at 40th, the state's economic well-being dropped from 36th to 46th. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Rich Huddleston, Executive Director of Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, says it's important to note the state has made progress on a lot of indicators since 2010. However, compared to last year's data, Arkansas did lose ground in some key areas. The big one, he says, was child poverty. According to this year's report, which analyzes data from 2017 to 2018, the number of Arkansas children living in poverty increased by 15,000.
We have about one in four kids living in poverty. And what we know about child poverty is that it impacts kids not only at the current stage in their life, but also what happens to them later in life. And has a negative impact on their health, their brain development, their school performance, their future workforce prospects, their ability to earn a good job prospects, and their future ability, to take care of the families that they might have down the line.
Huddleston says child poverty in Arkansas is especially problematic when you consider a disproportionate number of children of color are living in poverty. The poverty rate for white children is about 17%, which Huddleston says is too high, but it's still lower than it is among minority communities.
Based on the latest data, about 45% of Arkansas's black kids are living in poverty, and about 33% of Hispanic or Latino kids are living in poverty. And so basically you're talking child poverty rates for kids of color that are 2 to 3 times higher than for white kids.
The higher poverty rate is no fault of children or their families, Huddleston says, but rather it's a result of decades or centuries of racism.
And bad public policy at both the state and federal level in areas like housing, slavery, of course, years ago, the persuasive effects of Jim Crow era laws, and also big disparities and big systemic disparities. The criminal justice system and things like education and healthcare.
Huddleston says the increase in child poverty, especially for children of color, is very alarming. The new Kids Count report does not include data from this year, but Huddleston says he knows poverty has gotten worse because of the pandemic.
Once you start talking about the layoffs that we've had and the economic impact that the pandemic has had, especially on low-income families and families of color who have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic, because we know that low-income parents and parents of children of color tend to disproportionately work in like the hospitality industry, the restaurant industry, industries that have really seen massive layoffs. So we know that child poverty has gotten worse, but especially for families of color.
To analyze the effects of the pandemic on child well-being, the Annie E. Casey Foundation will issue a special report in December. Huddleston says he expects the study to show the health and economic impacts of the pandemic have been huge.
There have been some reasonable efforts at the federal level to put in place some short-term measures, to help mitigate the impact of these economic job losses and the economic collapse. But I think the implementation of those efforts have really been uneven at best. I mean, if you talk about, like in Arkansas, for example, talking about trying to get unemployment benefits to families, well, the implementation of that has been nothing short of, quite frankly, just a mess. But, that's true not only in Arkansas, but in most other states.
The pandemic is also affecting education. Huddleston says he's hearing a lot of anecdotal reports about how low-income students and students of color are losing ground in education because of things like lack of access to reliable internet to participate in virtual learning.
If you don't have the right devices at home, if you don't have parents who have the skills to help you navigate that technology, which is going to be disproportionately true for low-income students and students of color, then we know that that they will have lost ground. But it's not just online access; it's things like the closing of after-school programs and the closing of summer programs, strategies which we know can really help level the playing field for low-income students and students of color. A lot of that has gone by the wayside during the pandemic, and we don't know when many of those programs are coming back.
Children's health is being impacted too. Parents are delaying visits to the doctor, so their kids are not receiving vaccines or routine checkups.
And so there were diseases that were left untreated. There were conditions that have been left undiagnosed. And so that's going to have an impact on child health, which, of course, is also going to impact their ability to learn next year. So there are lots of things about the pandemic that are happening now, that are going to impact the health, educational prospects, and economic well-being of children and families. Quite frankly, that could have lasting implications for years, especially if we don't come up with strategies over the next year or two to really try and address what happened during the pandemic.
The Annie E. Casey Foundation will release a special report in December focused on data from the pandemic period. Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families will participate in the special data release. The current edition of the Kids Count report is available at aecf.org/databook. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And disclaimer time, my wife Laura Kellums is the director of the Northwest Arkansas Office of Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. I had nothing to do with the assigning, reporting, writing, or editing of this story. During a special online meeting last week, Fayetteville City Council voted to revive a disbanded City Board of Health. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich spoke with Councilmember Matthew Petty, who proposed the resolution, and she also spoke with Attorney Kit Williams about the board's role. Here's Jacqueline's report.
During a special virtual meeting called last Wednesday, Fayetteville City Council voted 7-0 with one member absent to reinstate the city's Board of Health.
I am Fayetteville City Attorney Kit Williams.
Along with Fayetteville Deputy Attorney Blake Pennington, Kit Williams scrutinized the legality of the Municipal Board of Health, which he says were first mandated in Arkansas in the late 19th century.
Finally, early this century, they took it out and said we may do it rather than we had to do it. We established one back when I first became city attorney just a couple years in, like 2003.
Disbanding in 2018, Williams says, deferring to the Washington County Health Unit, which operates under the Arkansas Department of Health, to monitor and respond to any communicable disease outbreaks. Matthew Petty, Fayetteville City Council member, Ward 2, sponsored the resolution.
There are a lot of people that are suffering and dying in our city and in our county.
Washington County has the highest coronavirus case count in Arkansas, over 3,300 cases so far. Of those, 30 individuals have died. In Arkansas, over 20,000 cases have occurred. Over 260 Arkansans have died. Matthew Petty says broad expertise by the new City Health Board will provide the mayor, city council, and residents critical insight.
We know there are things happening out there in the community that are being changed by COVID for the worse in these households, and we need to understand what the public health impacts of that are.
When the World Health Organization declared the COVID-19 pandemic on March 11th, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson didn't issue a shelter-in-place order. Instead, he directed public facilities and non-essential places of business to temporarily close. Many businesses have since reopened this summer under social distancing and mask guidelines. In contrast, Fayetteville City Council 2 weeks ago mandated masks be worn by residents in public, including inside retail stores and restaurants, a resolution also sponsored by Matthew Petty.
The Board of Health is going to be foundational to our continued responses to COVID-19. Personally, I see one of the most important strategies for us going forward is to achieve mass testing. We're nowhere close to doing that. And after masks, it's the most important thing.
According to Fayetteville Public Information Officer Lisa Thurber, Mayor Lionel Jordan, an ex officio member of the board, has confirmed 5 members. They are Jay Gandy, PhD, Associate Provost, UAMS Northwest; Lenny Whiteman, Vice President of Managed Care, Washington Regional; Huda Sharaf, MD, Medical Director of Pat Walker Health Center on the U of A campus; Gary Berner, MD, Chief Medical Officer, Community Clinic; and Joey Gardner, DSW, Care Coordinator, Supervisor at Beacon Health Operations. 2 additional members are Stephanie Ho, MD, Physician, Vector Health and Wellness, and Hershey Gardner, a lawyer, as well as an MD at Highlands Oncology Group. Brad Harden, Fayetteville's Fire Chief, is serving as the Health Board's Public Safety Director. The resolution also creates a City Health Officer position, says Kit Williams.
With the doctors that I believe the mayor has appointed, and many of which were suggested by Alderman Petty, we'll have some real expertise and medical knowledge on there that I think is needed in this time, so that the citizens will more perfectly understand how serious this situation is.
Williams says the City Board of Health has extraterritorial powers, in this case reaching into unincorporated areas.
In times like now, when we have an epidemic with this disease, their powers actually extend beyond the city limits. Normally, the city council, their power doesn't extend beyond the city limits, and at the maximum it's 1 mile, except for planning, but not ordinances and stuff like that would be for regulating health. So the City Board of Health, according to the statute, can have 5 miles outside the city limits, only for purposes of quarantine, though. So it's not like a general power.
And the board can pass resolutions, Williams says.
And so the statute says that this Board of Health can issue from time to time such orders and adopt such rules and regulations not inconsistent with the public health laws of this state, nor with the orders and rules of the State Board of Health. I think they can speak with great authority as doctors about what our citizens have to do if we are not going to spread this disease and have many more people die.
Fayetteville City Council also approved $50,000 in emergency funding to support the new board. Meetings will be held every 2 weeks via the app Zoom. The public can attend but must register. It will be up to the board to field questions, Williams says. The first virtual meeting of the Fayetteville Board of Health is scheduled to take place tomorrow at 3 p.m. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
You can keep up with developments regarding COVID-19 and our region through the COVID-19 update page at KUAF.com. We also provide live coverage of the governor's press briefings and bring you more news each weekday morning with newscasts from Antoinette Grajeda at 5:30 and 7:30 inside Morning Edition. And we'll continue to follow the virus and its effects here on Ozarks at Large. The Oklahoma State Department this morning is reporting 585 new cases of COVID-19 over the past 24 hours. Oklahoma has recorded 385 deaths from COVID-19 since the pandemic began. Several airports in Arkansas, including 2 in Northwest Arkansas, are receiving federal money for improvements. The FAA this morning announced more than $800 million will be awarded to airports across the country. Northwest Arkansas National Airport will receive nearly $4.7 million for the expansion of the terminal building. The Carroll County Airport in Berryville will get almost $230,000 for several infrastructure projects, including taxiway lighting and runway lighting. The University of Arkansas is receiving a $317,000 real estate gift from Tom Rowland, an alum, that will result in the naming of the exhibition gallery in the Anthony Timberland Center for Design and Materials Innovation in the Faye Jones School of Architecture and Design. Roland graduated from the U of A in 1967 with a degree in business administration and now lives in North Carolina. The gallery will be known as the Thomas Roland Exhibition Gallery. The center will be on the northeast corner of the university's Wingate Art and Design District along Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in South Fayetteville. Mercy Northwest Hospital is on the most recent Fortune IBM Watson Health 100 list for top hospitals. It's the second consecutive year the hospital has earned the distinction that's based on several indicators, including survival rates, wait time in emergency rooms, and ratings from patients. Arkansas Secretary of Corrections Wendy Kelly is retiring from the post at the end of July. The announcement was made at a Board of Corrections meeting yesterday. Kelly has led the Department of Corrections since 2015 and was the first woman to head the agency.
The Spaceberry Drive-In Music Festival is July 3rd and 4th on the farm in Eureka Springs. Social distance parking with a max capacity of 5 people per space is available. Bands include Forgotten Space, Arkansas, Friends of the Family, and more. SpaceberryFestival.org for tickets and details.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me on my front porch as we continue social distancing is Catherine Schultz, our Milton Grammarian. How are you?
I'm good.
What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about mnemonics.
Mnemonics.
When I first studied journalism, I learned a quick little phrase that helped me remember what I was supposed to include in a news story.
Okay.
The 5 W's and an H.
Yep.
And what does that stand for?
Who, when, where, why, what, how.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we call that device, that phrase used to remember things, what?
A mnemonic.
Mnemonic, uh-huh. And how do you spell that strange-looking word?
It's M-N.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's
It's knee, not
right.
No, yeah, mnemonic.
M-E-N. Oh wait, no.
M-N-E-M-O-N-I-C. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A mnemonic is a device such as a pattern of letters, ideas, or associations that assist in remembering something.
Right.
Mnemonic devices include special rhymes and poems, acronyms, images, songs, outlines, and other tools. The word is derived from a Greek phrase meaning to remember. Of course, someone had to classify the different kinds of mnemonics.
Well, yeah.
In fact, several someones did, and I was happy to find this fairly simple listing of types of mnemonics. First one is spelling mnemonics. Mm. Spelling mnemonics are rules, patterns, and phrases used to remember certain difficult spellings, such as I before E except after C.
Gotcha.
How do you use that? What word might you use that in? Can you think of one?
You mean the rule?
Yeah.
Believe?
Yeah, believe's the big one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But actually, this one, and I had never known this, I like this, never believe a lie. Lie is in believe.
And it's like that.
At the place where you get messed up.
Yeah.
Then there are order mnemonics. Often we need to remember the specific order of things. These can include scientific principles, music-related teachings, mathematical equations, and more.
Every good boy deserves favor.
Yeah. That is?
Musical scale or something?
It's musical.
Notes?
It's on the scale. It's the notes on the musical scale, I think.
Yeah. I've heard the mnemonic. I just really haven't known what it is.
I don't. Every attempt I made at learning to play music failed.
So. Yeah.
Remembering the Great Lakes from west to east.
Sure.
Sergeant Major hates eating onions. So what do we got?
Superior.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Hates.
Huron?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Eating.
Erie.
Uh-huh. Ontario. Oh, onions.
Ontario.
Yeah, sorry. As you might imagine, the phrase has been updated. These days, students may remember this ditty, Superman helps everyone.
Oh, I like that one better.
Well, except Superman and everyone should be one word each.
Yeah,
but whatever works.
Right.
English was the only class in junior high I ever excelled in, so I got directed away from higher math and science into home ec, and I can't remember what else. All this is to say I'm not very well-versed in the classification of living things, a deficit that hinders me in many a trivia game.
Yeah.
However, thanks to a mnemonic, I can name them, in order even. King Philip came over from Granada, Spain.
Kingdom
phylum.
Came.
Okay, order is the O. Mm-hmm. C is the, I don't know C.
Class.
Oh, class. Order.
From.
Phylum? No.
That starts with a P.
Yeah. Well, there's that.
You don't cheat it that way. It's where you come from. When you think
Kansas?
Of where you
go. That's a K.
When you think, like, who are your people?
Who are my folks?
Family.
Oh, family. Okay.
And then, let's see, Granada.
Genus.
Uh-huh. And Spain.
Species.
Yeah. Kyle, what mnemonic do you use to remember the order of planets from the sun?
I knew it 45 years ago. Yeah. But
my very educated mother just served us 9 pizzas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although now.
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
So my is?
Mercury.
Very.
Venus.
Educated.
Earth.
Mother.
Mars.
Just.
Jupiter.
Served.
Saturn.
Us.
Uranus.
9.
Neptune.
And P.
Pluto.
Yeah. As you are about to tell me, how has that changed?
Well, you don't have pizzas anymore.
Right. So my very educated mother just served us noodles.
Oh. Okay. Keep it Italian.
Which is better for you than
that's
pizza.
Right. That's right.
Well, not really, but.
All right.
Okay. Acronym mnemonics. The English language is full of acronyms that we use as shorthand. ASAP, AWOL, PIN.
SNAFU.
Yeah, lots and lots. Acronyms help us remember things, too, using the first letter of each word in a phrase as a mnemonic. If you don't care about the order of the Great Lakes, the word homes will suffice for remembering all their names.
You don't have to go directionally.
Yeah.
It's just
that's the one I've used for years. I didn't even care about Western Mesa, although that's good because I visit New York, Upper New York State and Canada every once in a while, so it's nice to
know that Ontario is up there, yeah.
Okay, Kyle, who is Roy G. Biv?
That's our rainbow friend
who has
all the primary colors.
So Roy?
Red, orange, yellow.
G?
Green.
Blue, I'm sorry, Biv.
Blue, indigo, violet.
Yeah. Rhyme or poem mnemonics. Setting facts to music is helpful to memory. Just ask a child to sing you their ABCs.
Sure.
And rhyming has the same benefit. Kyle, what months of the year have 30 days and which have 31?
Now, I don't use rhymes. I use my knuckles for that.
January, February, March, April.
Because if you hit your knuckle, mm-hmm. start on your knuckle mm-hmm. with January, and then the spaces in between don't have 30.
Okay.
So, January, February, March, April, and then you return. So, this last knuckle is what? July, August. You hit that one twice, mm-hmm. then you come back. September, October, November,
yeah,
December.
I remembered there was something like that.
I don't know a rhyme.
This is, I know you've heard it. 30 days has September, April, June, and November. And that's as far as I ever go.
Because that's all
I need to know. I mean, I know February is weird, and all the rest have 31.
Right.
But,
oh, yeah. Doesn't that end with, and sometimes February has 28,
yeah,
but sometimes 29?
30 days has September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31, save February with 28 days clear and 29 each leap year.
Yeah, you're right. I've lost interest by the time I get there.
I wouldn't have remembered that. Many, many mnemonics, and that's hard to say, mm-hmm. exist in the fields of math and science. Because I was always in home ec class, I didn't learn them.
Right.
But I found one online I really like.
Okay.
It's the value for pi, or value of pi.
Okay.
It's for the value of pi. It's a sentence containing 8 words. Each word stands for the numerals in pi.
Okay.
And pi is 3.1415927, or that's as far as I guess most people take it. I know it goes on infinitely,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The number of letters in each word denotes each of the first 8 numerals. And the sentence is, may I have a large container of coffee? So, may has how many letters?
Oh, 3.
Mm-hmm. I.
1.
Uh-huh. Have.
4.
A.
1.
Large.
5.
Container.
nine.
Uh-huh. Of?
Two.
Coffee.
Six.
Seven.
Yeah, sure.
It's so funny, when I was writing this, you know, my editing genes come out, yeah. And I thought, we don't need container. I'm going to make that cup. And then I went, oh, wait a minute.
And that's why you were directed.
Yeah. I'll probably never use that except on March 14th every year, which is?
Pi Day.
Yeah.
Yes. And you know how you can remember what? The four kinds of mnemonics?
How?
SOAR. Spelling, oh. Order, acronym, rhyme.
He was waiting for that.
I was. Catherine Sherrill is our militant grammarian.
People inside immigration detention centers are especially at risk from COVID-19.
There's no way to be safely detained during a pandemic.
Lawyers want to get their clients better protection or even freedom.
ICE should continue to release people, especially those who are medically vulnerable to COVID-19, to prevent a humanitarian disaster.
What the options are on the next morning edition from NPR News.
That's tomorrow morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. The list of possible topics this week for John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics, is long. There is the ongoing fight against the coronavirus, the continued move for justice reform, and the emerging reporting about intelligence regarding possible Russian bounties for American lives in Afghanistan. Roby began this week's conversation focusing on possible hate crime legislation in Arkansas.
So we've had developments here in Arkansas where Governor Asa Hutchinson has basically said, I am supportive of this, and you see some bipartisan support in the legislature, some resistance as well. None of that could happen until next legislative session. You don't think there's going to be anything before then, do you?
Well, that's interesting. There's some people who think maybe so, that maybe there could be a special session and it could be done. There's some people involved in it see that as a potential, as a possibility. So it could happen before. Certainly the next session, but don't discount the possibility of something before. People who are behind this may have a mild interest in seeing that happen.
What would be the advantage to getting it done early? I mean, what would be the emergency situation?
Politically, I guess. I mean, things are unsettled, and people are concerned about how things are going to play, and politically, and it might possibly have some effect. I can't see much beyond that, but I think there's an interest also in when the iron is hot, strike. And on hate crimes and on taking down Confederate monuments, these are major deals that are unlikely events in Arkansas, unlikely political actions. And if they ever are going to happen, it would seem to be in the current mood. And should that mood ease, as moods tend to over time, you might lose some of the momentum.
We've seen Mississippi over the weekend get rid of its Confederate symbolism in its state flag. I don't think there's a replacement yet, but there's definitely an abolishment of that actual state flag, which was kind of came from out of nowhere, to be honest with you. I mean, it really moved quickly, as you're talking about. Arkansas also has some symbolism, and is it its state flag? Do you think this is something that could also fold into hate crimes, Confederate statues coming down?
Yes. Let me just say, if this waits till the next session, as it might, this is going to be, start getting in shape now for covering the next legislative session. I mean, particularly at my age, it's time to go on a diet and get some aerobic work going. Because this, first of all, you've got a whole new legislative culture. The state Senate, especially, has just about had it with Asa Hutchinson. They're just tired of him. They've been around too long, and he's run things through his nephew too long, they think. So there's going to be a lot more scrutiny given to governor's discretion. And then this, as Asa said yesterday on George Stephanopoulos' show, he didn't say, I think we should move that monument on the northeast corner of the Confederate soldier monument. He didn't say in those words, but he said, I think they should be moved. Some of them should be moved to less public places where it's more historic rather than generally celebratory. And then he said the legislature will weigh in on that, as I would think that they will. It's hate crimes legislation. It will be difficult before it's over to get that done. It's not an easy thing to do. And then the flag, we already had in the last session, now departed from the legislature, chief of staff to the mayor of Little Rock, Frank Scott, Charles Blake, had the bill to change the symbolism of the stars that representing the governances of the state and have them have the Confederacy changed to the Native Americans who were here. And that, and the governor was for that, but it didn't get passed. All of that, cultural, racial, financial, fiscal, viral, it's going to be something. It is truly going to be something.
It sounds like it'll be Martin Luther King Jr., Robert E. Lee, holiday separation on steroids.
Times hundreds, yes, yes.
Development over the weekend, we see another police shooting, this time in Little Rock, a little bit different than what we've seen nationally in terms of just an all-out, somebody stepped on someone's neck and choked them out there, but there's certainly a lot of controversy around this police shooting in Little Rock. Does this fold into the conversation about hate crimes? Does this fold into the conversation about police brutality that we've been witnessing for the last month, really, here in the streets of Little Rock?
It certainly folds into it. How much, I'm not sure. It depends on circumstances and obviously how it's perceived, and I don't have a good reading on that, but everything folds into this conversation. I mean, this moment in race in America and in Arkansas as well is one of the darndest things I've ever seen. It's you remember how the movement on gay marriage took some time but then happened? It's just happened precipitously on race. And all of this folds into the discussion, and it remains to be seen what our legislature will do and what factors will play. And this shooting, I just don't have a take on it. But this hate crimes legislation, like, you've already got some legislators. I think Jason Rapert is on social media sort of resisting the idea that some crimes are more hateful than others or some hate matters more, you know, that argument.
Right.
Then you had this bill done by Senators Jim Hendren and Representative Nicole Clowney, and when I put on the Twitter that they were getting ready to announce it, the legislature sort of in the back had an explosion. Like, wait a minute, you two are doing this? Two white people? What about Senator Joyce Elliott? And then there's this bill includes gender identity and sexual orientation, and the gay community is saying, where are we? And why is this one section in here that says this bill changes nothing regarding other policies? Why do you have to put that in there? Legislating gets very, very hard, and it gets very, very nuanced. So the first 2 days' explosion on that issue was not about resistance from the conservatives to hate crime. It was infighting in the Democratic Party about who's doing this and why and who's the face of it and what does this section mean and what does that section mean. None of that has to do with the police shooting question because I don't really have a good feel for that. But we're getting ready to have some real politics and some real culture war
here. It's another ingredient in the stew that is
boiling. It's quite a stew. It is quite a stew.
It is. Over the weekend, the New York Times and other news organizations have later confirmed that apparently Russia was paying Taliban forces for basically American scalps in Afghanistan. Been some pushback on that from the administration that was not necessarily true, but I think we're going to learn more in the coming days as there's going to be congressional inquiry. And you've even seen on a Monday morning, Senator John Bozeman is saying, we've got to get to the bottom of this. And for him to maybe take a little bit of that stand is just signs that even the Republicans in the U.S. Congress are going to want to know more about this. What's the potential risk, do you think, for President Trump, depending on which way this story may play out?
I think it may hang in the balance. I mean, he's in trouble anyway. I mean, he's polling below 40. He's well behind. All that can change as they attack the Democrats for being socialists and wanting to do away with the police, whatever they end up saying. But this report, what it suggests is that if it's true in any respect, There's no way for him out of it. He can say, I didn't know. Well, then we find out that it was been in intelligence briefings, which he's famous for not reading. Or he knew, but he has chosen He's declined for the administration to presume to do anything about it, to start to do anything about it. He simply is stonewalling that. Is this because of his pal-ship with Putin? I don't know if... Well, at this point, let's just say we don't know if it's true. If it's true, I think it takes his... it solidifies his political difficulty. I cannot see him with the virus. Now, these will be famous last words by John Brummett. I cannot see him with the virus, with his with the race issue and police issue and the sort of the attack he's taken on that, and with and if there is truth to the fact that there were Russian that Russia was paying for deaths of American service men. And he should have known it or did know it and didn't do and is not doing anything about it. There's no way. That's the prescription for a landslide, even a landslide victory, even for Joe Biden. When I say that with italic, even for Joe Biden. Now, much is yet to be known, but I'm glad to see Senator Bozeman said, let's find out and let's see what happens.
Lastly, COVID world, everything on the uptick in Arkansas as well as other southern states, starting to be a lot more pressure. We've seen Texas actually is regressing now some in terms of its opening up for business. Florida closing some beaches down in south parts of Florida there. May see some other states start going backwards too. Do you sense that Arkansas starts ratcheting down some? If you look at it per capita, we are just as much of a hotspot as some of those other bigger states that have bigger numbers, per se.
I currently believe it's like Hutchison said on ABC yesterday, well, we're certainly not moving forward, meaning we're in phase two and we're not going to go to phase three. You're asking, I think, basically, are we going to start ratcheting back from where we are? Mm-hmm. Based on the current numbers, woeful though they are, and troubling every day, almost overbearingly so, if they're sort of like this, a 600 a day, and they can say, well, they're mostly in food processing industry, or there's a lot of prison element, then I don't think so. But this thing, I mean, the epidemiologist will explain to you, if it's out there like that, it's going to be somewhere else, you know. And the slightest evidence that our new practices under phase two and bars on Dixon Street and or at the Blake's this weekend, if there's any real evidence that that is causing the numbers to spike, I think we gotta go back. I do. And
that's a tough political calculus.
It's a horrible thing.
For the governor.
It's a very horrible thing. He's always told me, and he's told everyone, I'll let the data and the medical and the health professionals guide me. Okay, well, let's just see. I'm not hoping for that, goodness knows. I mean, maybe this is our biggest problem, and maybe it's contained, and maybe it will begin to wane, and we'll all live happily ever after. But... that's a big if right now.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and his columns can be found at ArkansasOnline.com or through the Northwest Arkansas edition of the paper at NWAOnline.com. He spoke with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. And there is more from their conversation about Tom Cotton, about D.C. statehood, and more regarding the president. That can be found at TalkBusiness.net.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, how a massacre of African Americans in Arkansas a century ago reaches across the decades. A massacre writer J. Chester Johnson didn't learn about when he was growing up in Arkansas.
And I was shocked about it. I mean, she laid out where all it happened and she gave a nice summary of the event itself and its aftermath, and I was stunned by it because I grew up in Drew County, which is one county removed from Phillips County, the site of the massacre, and I had never heard anything about it at school, at church, social gatherings.
Our conversation with J. Chester Johnson, author of Damaged Heritage, The Elaine Race Massacre and a Story of Reconciliation, about his grandfather's participation in the massacre, his friendship with a descendant of people murdered in the massacre, and why we have to confront a history of racism head on. That's tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m. on Ozarks at Large on 91.3 KUAF.
What is Medusae fossa? I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager with the U of A Center for Space and Planetary Science. And this is Scratching the Surface. The Medusae fossa formation is a soft, eroded deposit that extends for more than 5,000 kilometers along the equator of Mars. It has an area equal to 20% the size of the continental United States. It has copious amounts of porous rock, similar to pumice and volcanic ash here on Earth. So what is the mystery of Medusae? There's no obvious volcanic source. So how could there be volcanic materials without a volcano? Turns out Medusae may have actually originated from Olympus Mons, the solar system's largest volcano. Then Medusae, being easily eroded and porous, may have actually floated. Yes, you heard right, floated across an early Martian sea to its present location. This process is actually not too far-fetched. On Earth, submarine volcanism produces large patches of floating pumice in the ocean. On Mars, Olympus Mons would have erupted into icy sediment, producing a lightweight rock called hyaloclastite. This rock would then landslide to a shallow sea and float, eventually eroding and depositing to form what we now call the Medusae Fossa Formation. For more on the Center for Space and Planetary Science, spacecenter.uark.edu.
Scratching the Surface with your host, Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, is a production of 91.3 FM, KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. This is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas.
This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors tonight included Antoinette Grajeda and Jacqueline Froelich. Timothy Dennis mastered our show this evening. Scratching the Surface, written and hosted by Caitlin Ahrens, produced in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio by Pete Hartman. Conversations between Roby Brock from Talk Business and John Brummett with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Kyle Kelms, back with you tomorrow at noon.